global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
From Bloomberg World headquarters, I'm Charlie Pellett. Stocks are edging higher on this Friday. A surge in crude is boosting energy producers. Right now, we've got West Texas Intermediate crude up 6.3%, rallying $2.35 the barrel, $39.61 on WTI. Brent crude up 5.9%, gaining $2.33 a barrel, $41.76. Natural gas is down 1.4%. 10-year down 8/32, the yield 1.71%. Gold up 0.4%, higher by 4.80 the ounce to 1242. S&P 500 index up 7 to 2049, a gain of 0.4%. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 54 points, a gain of 0.3%. NASDAQ up 4, a gain of 0.1%. I'm Charlie Pellett, and that's a Bloomberg Business Flash.
You're listening to Taking Stock with Pim Fox and Kathleen Hayes on Bloomberg Radio.
3D printing, it's a lot more than cute little keychains and plastic party favors and the like. 3D printing, in fact, has been moving ahead at the speed of light. This year at the Insight 3D Printing Conference and Expo, taking place April 10th through 12th at the Jacob Javits Convention Center here in New York City, one of the companies that's going to be presenting is Carbon. Carbon is a company that has raised more than $140 million in venture funding. And what's really making them unique is they're the first company in the $4 billion 3D printing industry to offer a serious and seriously fast alternative to conventional injection molds. Joseph DeSimone is co-founder and CEO of Carbon 3D. He's based in Redwood City. Tyler Benster's in studio with us. He is actually the chair of the Insight 3D Printing Conference and Expo. He's a general partner at Asimov Ventures. It's an early stage venture capital firm that focuses on 3D printing and robotics, and he's based in Seattle. So, Tyler, you're here in studio. Let's start with you. 3D printing, what is the latest? What are we going to see and hear about if we go to the Expo this week?
2016 is, I think, the most exciting year on record for the industry. We're seeing a fundamental shift from a technology that grew as a prototyping technique to a technology as a finished good production technique. And as a result, we have 300 million metric tons of plastic that is produced every year waiting to be disrupted. So at the conference this year, what we've focused on is curating a program that talks about this imminent disruption in manufacturing, in plastics, but also metals, that we have applications in aerospace and automotive that are going to be absolutely transformative when we look at the impact on how our businesses are structured.
Tyler, can you give us an example of something that is made one way now, but in the future will be made using 3D printing technology?
Absolutely. I think one of the early areas of success has been any place that touches the body. All of us have different shapes, but we have different, similar needs medically and fashion-wise. And so when we look at Invisalign with the braces, when we look at insoles like Weave, when we look at a number of other products in that arena, those are, I think, the first tipping points. But moving forward, we have all of this disruption coming to customer-facing parts in automotive. Aerospace, we have hundreds of parts and planes that are being flown in 737s. So I think 3D printing is here and now in ways more than we realize when we look at the parts around us.
So, Joseph DeSimone, congratulations on your new 3D printer. I believe it's called the M1. It fires UV light at its syrupy resins to produce prototypes and production parts that can be more bouncy, stiff, tough, or heat resistant than rival products. You're the co-founder and CEO of Carbon 3D. Tell us a little bit about the company and how you got into this industry.
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, we look forward to coming to New York City. I have been a faculty member at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill for 25 years and have been basically a polymer guy the whole time. And we had this breakthrough several years ago and decided that it was really transformational on how one fabricates objects and do it out of real materials that have real properties. You know, one of the big shortcomings in 3D printing has been that, as you started off, it's mostly been a lot about toys, especially in the polymeric materials and plastics world. And, you know, advanced materials are a big part of, lightweight automobiles that are more energy efficient, or aircraft, or better protection systems. But the materials in traditional 3D printers did not have the properties to allow one to make real parts. And in addition, most 3D printers actually take a long time. They can be fast on a prototyping scale, but they're not fast enough in a manufacturing. And so we believe it's now time to take 3D printing from a prototyping only world to prototyping with performance, and then actually move into 3D manufacturing. And that's what our company's focus is. And so we assembled an amazing team in Silicon Valley. We've got a third of the team does hardware engineering, a third does software engineering, and a third does material science. And we got a lot of ex-Tesla people and Apple people and Google and PayPal. And it's just an amazing team to come together to try to revolutionize manufacturing.
Give us a little bit of detail about the confrontation between the surface finish of a product and then the mechanical properties of that product. You know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, yeah. So most 3D printing is actually a 2D printing over and over again. And it's been a celebration of mechanical engineering, in essence, to be able to put down layer by layer very precisely. And when you do that, when you have layers, you can see each layer. It's kind of like shale or sheets of paper put together. You can see it on the edge, and so that's one aspect. But more importantly, those layers go right through the object. And when you have layers in there, that's a site of defect in mechanical properties often. And it often, historically, when you make a 3D printed part, the properties change depending on the orientation of how you build the part relative to where the layers are. And so our properties, we build them, we actually grow parts. We grow them continuously. And that allows us to eliminate layers. And since we grow them, we can also grow them much more quickly. And it lends itself to us innovating and using advanced concepts in polymer science to make parts that have properties that have never been available before, including, for example, great elastomers or great rubbery materials, elastic materials. So we have, for the first time, elastic materials that have great energy recovery, such that you can make a midsole in a sneaker that has the energy recovery and the characteristics and properties to be a super, super duper sneaker. Right now, 3D printing with sneakers, a lot of people are hearing about it, but it's often sintering powder together. And the powder will fall apart over time. And so having real materials in that application will allow us to really scale up. And so now you can have sneakers not only with great performance, but designed for your own foot and your own comfort and characteristics.
So, Tyler, who's really going to profit from this from a company standpoint? Who is racing whom right now? I can understand that if I'm making, and I was kind of making a little joke when I said, plastic keychains and that kind of thing, because 3D printing's gone into, health devices and so many very sophisticated and important applications, much faster, I think, than most people realize. So who profits from this and how? Who should we be betting on if we want to make money in 3D printing?
So I'm going to divide this into two buckets. The first bucket is the incumbent manufacturers in industries that require nations to build. This is aerospace and automotive primarily. And these companies, the incumbent players, are going to benefit as they will be capturing much of the efficiency gains that the technology brings. However, in other areas, the story is different. 3D printing is ultimately a commoditization of manufacturing. It turns what used to be a high-skill, high-touch manufacturing process and turns it into a commodity and reduces the price. So I see some strong parallels to what we saw with cloud computing, where little companies and startups can get started with, say, a $40,000 a year subscription for a carbon printer, and they can start building their own products and then scale out on the number of machines as their volume grows. So being able to scale like you would scale across different computer servers, I think, will be an enormous enabler for the startup community.
Joseph DeSimone, do you concur with what Tyler says? And then tell us a little bit about the process that you use, this CLIP process.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And I think the opportunities, for example, like, for inventory control and having the ability of not having to store a lot of inventory for replacement parts having inventory on demand will make a lot of companies more profitable and efficient, so they don't have to keep inventory for tens of years, for example. And, you know, a lot of people are keeping inventory on plastic parts, and, you know, plastic parts degrade over time. They hydrolyze, they shrink, they brittle, they fade. You actually want a fresh part, and the ability of having on-demand process for making fresh parts can be really important for your car. Our process is a new process. We grow parts. We talked about it at TED, and I unveiled it at TED about a year ago, representing our team. And what we do is we use light and oxygen at the same time that allows us to grow parts. It kind of looks like the Terminator 2 with T-1000 coming out of a puddle.
We'll just stick with that image, the T-1000 coming out of a puddle. What do you think, Tyler? You like that?
It's an amazing image.
All right. Joseph DeSimone, co-founder, chief executive, Carbon, based in Redwood City, California. Our thanks to Tyler Benster, general partner, Asimov Ventures, based in Seattle, Washington. This is Taking Stock.